And the archive will also be available at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You're welcome to download an archive, that archive, and edit it and use it in any way that you wish. And so I really must go. There's another show coming up. I love you guys, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Good evening. Good evening to both of you. And so Cynthia Manley can't make it tonight. She's on vacation. So I'm just going to remind you to stand. And I'm going to also remind you to stay tuned for Cup of Joe. That is our friend Joe Vecchio, who will be joining us in just a few minutes at 11 p.m. for the nighttime Cup of Joe. Also want to remind you to please remain on for the midnight showing of John Fox's feature. It's the Midnight Rocky Horror John Fox Show. Actually, it's Foxed Up, all Foxed Up with John Fox. And good evening to you all.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
Those who have an unvoiced. From Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
Okay. I hope this is the right time now. I hope it's working now. Hi, everybody. How you doing? It's a Cup of Joe Radio Show, an abbreviated version tonight. Technical issues have forced us. It's the CIA. Don't give me this technical issue stuff. We know the CIA is out there watching us. How's everybody doing tonight? I hope you're having a good evening. We've only got about 15 minutes or so a show here, but that's okay.
15 minutes. You know, Billy Shears in the chat room was saying at the half-hour mark, said, hey, half of Joe's material is gone. I was like, hey, Billy, half nothing is still nothing. How are you all tonight? It's been a very warm day here in Chicago, very warm winter so far. Of course, it's only November. You know, what I love about Chicago is that while we do get really, really cold weather, and we do get really, really hot weather, the areas where you get really, really cold are only about maybe 2 or 3 weeks out of the year, maybe a month at best. And the time when you get really, really hot weather is also around the same. Most of the time, it's a fairly pleasant. You can wear a jacket and just relax and go outside, and it's a nice, comfortable temperature. So I really enjoy that about Chicago. I had a busy day at work today, very busy day. I'm trying to set up the computer at work where I'm doing. We want to try to do more digital stuff, and, you know, we can't afford to buy a whole lot of equipment. And so we're trying to get things done with the equipment that we have available. I'm sorry, I had a brain fart there for a second. I hate it when I get in the middle of talking about something, and then I just kind of forget what I was saying, and all that. I had a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. Actually, I have plenty of time to talk about what I really want to talk about. I've been reading Paul Krugman's book, Conscience of a Liberal, and it's a very good book. Although, as I mentioned the other day, it's really not telling me anything I didn't really know. And that's why I don't go to see a lot of hardcore liberal movies. I didn't see An Inconvenient Truth. I didn't see Sicko. I don't have to see it. But I was getting to the section where he talks about how a lot of economists take it for granted that there are the invisible forces, the invisible hand of Adam Smith's economics. And he talks about the Great Compression, which is what happened during the New Deal, where everybody's salaries in the middle class really, you know, got inflated, and there was a lot less inequality. I mean, there were still very rich people, but the very rich people, for the most part, didn't have the kind of huge amounts of wealth that they have nowadays, or at the very least, the ones that did were taxed down to a more reasonable level, which is the way it should be as far as I'm concerned. The upper level tax rate, and again, this is for the upper levels, the people making a lot, was something like 80%, and was upwards of 90% in the 50s, over 90%, I think, for a short period of time, which meant only that if you earned that kind of money, you were paying that kind of taxes, and not on every penny you made. For those of you who don't understand progressive tax, and it's a little confusing, it's confusing to me a little bit, but basically what happens is you take, say, the first $50,000 you make, and the numbers are all wrong, but this is the general idea. The first $50,000 you make is taxed at X percentage. Then from $50,000 to $100,000 is the next bracket, and you get taxed on that salary for, you know, an X plus Y percentage, and so on and so on and so on. And so you get to that last thing when you're making more than, say, you know, $1 million or $2 million a year. Then you get then that particular salary gets taxed at a certain percentage. My feeling is, for income tax, I think in this day and age, what we ought to do, and if we ever get the political clout to do that again, what we really ought to do is we ought to make the first $30,000 everybody earns tax free. Anybody making less than $30,000 a year, no income tax. Period. Maybe if your state wants to charge a tax, the state charge a tax. Whatever. Some states have no income tax. Florida, for example, has no state income tax. They get their money from tourists. So, you know, this way, you know, people who work at McDonald's, people working myself, then, you know, we don't have to worry about paying tax. Because the way things are going now, the upper tax rate is down to like 37%, which is ridiculously low. Ridiculously low. And we need to raise that up, you know, and then, you know, you get taxed progressively from then, and the tax should be high. Frankly, I think for the next 40 years, just to punish the sons of bitches, I think we ought to make the upper tax rate about 95-96%. Not only make them pay their fair share, but you know, bring them back down to reality a little bit. But a big reason why we have so many people making so much money, and this is one of the things that Paul Krugman talked about, is that we live in a different society now. Back, you know, back during the 30s and the 40s and 50s, that much wealth was kind of ostentatious and was frowned upon. And it was also because they had there was a union deal with GM where GM gave very generous benefits, blah, 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 specifically. And that was kind of considered to be the standard for worker-management relationships just to keep the peace, you know, so you don't have strikes and you don't have stuff going on every time. And it was a good deal because it basically raised the bar for everybody else. If they didn't want to have any problems, companies would raise the bar and give health care and give good pensions and give decent salaries and things like that. So that was a very important thing along those lines. And we've gotten to the point now where we kind of accept these outrageous salaries. I mean, we make Donald Trump a celebrity. You know, we make Donald Trump a celebrity because, you know, he's got a lot of money. And for no other reason than he's got a lot of money. And we keep forgetting the fact that Donald Trump didn't get that from nowhere. He was born into millions of dollars. I mean, and that's how a lot of this works. Bill Gates, yeah, sure, whatever kudos you want to give to him for building on it, he was born into millions of dollars. He had advantages that some of us will never have. And it's not all about hard work. People talk about, oh, if you just work hard. No, 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 no. Look, people, go to McDonald's. Go to McDonald's during one of their rushes and see how hard the people in there work. And they're making minimum wage. They work very, very hard for a living, and they get nothing in comparison. They get ripped off is what they get. Okay, and that's the way it is. And meanwhile, you have these CEOs who, during the 70s, Paul Krugman used the CEO of GM, General Motors, which at the time was the biggest employer in the country. He made roughly 40 times the salary of the average worker at General Motors. Nowadays, CEOs make roughly 400 times. And, you know, worker salaries really haven't gone up that much. They've gone up a little bit, but not really that much. Not enough to keep up with inflation, for crying out loud. Working people back then were making, and a good job, a good union job at GM, say, were making about $9,000 a year. Now, it sounds like, oh, my God, $9,000 a year. How could you live on that? Well, you know, you can live on that if your rent is like $75, $80 a month. If you can get a mortgage that's maybe $150, $200 a month. If food is cheap, you know, and you know, you did, what a loaf of bread costs, what, 15 cents, a quarter? A dozen eggs cost a quarter. Gallon of milk costs, you know, maybe 75 cents. But the gallon, you know, gallon of milk has gone away. Oh, and gas was like 39 cents a gallon. Now gas is I saw today the sign. It was $3.29 a gallon. $3.29 a gallon. And it's shooting to go up over $100 a barrel, too. And it's supposed to be going up about 20, 30 cents. That's why I don't have a car now. You know, that's a big reason why I don't have a car now. As convenient as it is, it's simply not worth the expense for me. It's a big reason I moved to Chicago, right? But the point is, we live in a society where we think that sort of ostentatious wealth is okay. We think that's cool. And there's no social limitation on people making these big salaries. And it's certainly not in the government. I mean, the government now supports that sort of thing, whereas as opposed to the government we had in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where the government generally supported workers on these issues. Generally. Not all the time, but generally. So societal forces can make a difference. And as bleak as things seem now, and we were talking in the chat room about it, I was talking with Nanette, my good friend Nanette, and, you know, she's very pessimistic about the future, as am I. She said, you know, she said that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, Joe, and I said, well, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, it's an oncoming train, an out-of-control oncoming train, someone brought up. And here I am with my shop, and I'm trying to take over this business and trying to make this business profitable in this day and age in what is a very, very tough industry. The one-hour photo industry is a very, very tough competitive business because we have to compete with CVS and with Walgreens and with Target and with all these other people doing it. So the only way we can really try to make things work is by really building on professional quality. And I told Zavin, my boss, I said, look, even after you make all these changes, and he's going to have to be spending some money to make some of these changes, even after you make these changes, there is no guarantee that this shop is going to be successful. Now, Nanette thinks I'm just being upbeat, and maybe I am being upbeat, but the truth of the matter is I desperately want this to work. I desperately want this to work, and the reason I desperately want this to work is because, quite frankly, I am just sick. I am just sick of working the regular 9-to-5 job for a living. I want to have a little bit more control because, quite frankly, I am tired of people not recognizing my skills and my talents. I'm a very smart person. I'm a very aggressive person when it comes to when I have control, when I have authority over something. I hark back to the days when I took over the photo lab the first time back about 10 years ago when the business was tough. It was the first time I'd ever been given a chance to manage anything, and I took it. I took that ball and I ran with it, man. And I'm the same way at this shop. I know I'm going to be taking over in a little while, but you know the boss is still there and he wants things to go slow, and I'm just like go now. Little things to me, like the way the shelves are arranged. You know, I want to clean stuff up. I want to make things look a lot professional. But he doesn't want to do that right now. So it's very, very difficult for me to contain myself because once I know I have that opportunity, I don't like waiting. I don't want to say, oh, we can wait for this time. No, as far as I'm concerned, we can't wait. I know we're going to improve, and I know we're going to get new equipment. But in the meantime, we need to set things up so that we can be more profitable immediately. Immediately. Do a lot more advertising. Do a lot more stuff in-house. Be able to do a lot more stuff than what we have. That's why I spent the greater part of today working on this computer. And you know something? What really got to me was we were kind of slow all day until I really started digging in the computer. Then we got busy. Of course, when I was occupied elsewhere, then we got busy. And I was like, damn it. But, you know, it's just the way things are for me. And here's the truth of it. I'm still better off, and everybody here in the Head-On chat room, we're all better off than about 3 or 4 billion people on this planet. We don't live in a war zone. Yeah, I'm going through some tough financial times. And by the way, if you want to drop a dime in the bucket, you can go to my website, cupojoe.blogspot.com. I'm trying to raise about 50 bucks if I can in the next few days or so. Just enough to get the domain name paid off, for crying out loud. And Cobweb's in the thing. He said, you know, customers notice a clean store and will shop there more often. That's exactly my policy. My boss, what he likes to do is he likes to keep old stuff hanging around. Like you know, old film orders and stuff like that, just sitting there. And he has a bunch of negatives sitting on a thing making people think like we're busy. And I'm like, man, you're not fooling anybody. You're absolutely not fooling anybody. And especially inside the Merchandise Mart, which is a really high-class establishment here in Chicago, very historic building. People who work there are very, very professional people. The Chicago Sun-Times is in the building across the way. It's attached. It's not part of the Merchandise Mart. But he's not fooling anybody. And I keep trying to explain to him that, you know, people aren't falling for this, that you have to keep the shop neat and clean, and you have to get rid of anything extraneous. And I'm very big on that. If we don't need it, get it out of the air. Okay? Get it out of the way. Okay, let me wrap things up. It was a short show again by today, and we apologize for the technical issues. But hey, stuff happens. Stuff happens. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been produced by the Head-On Radio Network. My good friend Bob Kincaid running the show out there in the studios in West Virginia. We have been sponsored by the unreportednews.net, your source for real news. You can listen to the 15 minutes of this or so on the archives of White River Society. Back tomorrow. John Fox is coming up. We'll be back with more.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of Joe. dust. With the cream of the steam, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of scotch, heat up a pan of stand, throw in a handful of dicks, that'll do every trick. Serve a carafe of mash upon a tray of ray. I'll lick a spoon of short. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of joe. Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, D.C., the U.S. Justice Department will take a new look at a dormant inquiry into the federal warrantless wiretap program. Rekindling of the investigation indicates a major shift in policy just days after new Attorney General Michael Mukasey took office. Investigators were denied security clearance last year, forcing the inquiry to be shelved. President Bush vetoed legislation which would fund job training, education, and health programs. It is the sixth veto of his administration and the latest in an intense battle with Democratic Congress over domestic spending. $1.6 trillion is the price tag a Democratic committee has put on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released today includes so-called hidden costs, like long-term health care for veterans and interest payments on money borrowed. The U.S. military is pulling 3,000 soldiers out of the Diyala province in Iraq, taking the edge off of last summer's controversial 30,000 troop increase. Most of the brigade will be home by Christmas. A U.S. Marine facing trial on charges of involuntary manslaughter in the murders of several Iraqi women and children will not enter a plea until his case begins. Lance Corporal Stephen Tatum was arraigned today in Camp Pendleton, California. He faces a maximum penalty of 19 years in prison if found guilty. Pakistani police rounding up supporters of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, throwing them in jail, saying they are violating the government's ban on public gatherings. Bhutto herself is under house arrest, demanding the immediate resignation of President General Pervez Musharraf. Iran is handing over a set of blueprints showing how to mold uranium metal into the shape of warheads.